limelson.org.
Listening to WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. Coming up today, we'll hear Florida This Week. It's a discussion about state and local politics that appears on WEDU-TV, the PBS station in Tampa. And it's a show that I moderate. The panel this week discussed whether or not vouchers greatly expanding school vouchers here in the state of Florida was a good idea. Also, arming teachers. We'll talk about some of the other big state and local topics coming up next, including the possible expansion of toll roads here in the state of Florida. As we listen back to the program today, you can email in your comments. You can email into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. And in later in this hour, we'll open up the phone lines and talk about some of the topics that were brought up. This is 88.5 FM. Coming up next, the legislature gives the go-ahead to spend millions on private school vouchers. The proposal to build hundreds of miles of toll roads across Florida gets initial approval from the State House and Senate. The voluntary program to arm teachers is closer to reality. And Jane Castor sets a high bar for her term in office. Political Insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week, our panelists are William March is an independent journalist. Sean Shaw is an attorney and a Democrat. Ernest Hooper is a columnist at the Tampa Bay Times and the host of That's All I'm Saying right here on WEDU. And Sharon Calvert is a blogger at Eye on Tampa Bay and a Republican. So nice to have you guys.
Good to be here.
Well, as the legislative session was nearing the end, state lawmakers sent Governor Ron DeSantis a bill creating a new taxpayer-funded voucher program to give to students to attend private and religious schools.
The Republican-led legislature authorized $130 million for the so-called Family Empowerment Scholarship Program. It would be available to as many as 18,000 students in its first year for families of four with annual incomes of $77,250 or less. It's an idea that was proposed years ago by then-Governor Jeb Bush, but dismissed as unconstitutional by the Florida Supreme Court back in 2006. The current governor, Ron DeSantis, is also a strong supporter of the program. Democrats contend sending tax dollars to private schools would strip away money from already cash-strapped public schools and lead to further erosion of the public school system. Republican supporters say the program will give parents more choice, especially if their local school is underperforming.
So, Sean, is this a good idea? Is this going to make our schools better? Is it going to make our kids have better educations in Florida?
I don't think so. Listen, the money we spend per pupil in this state is near the bottom nationally. What we pay teachers is near the bottom nationally. We just had to pass a tax referendum in Hillsborough County for school infrastructure because we don't have enough money to fix our schools. They're crumbling. Yet we're going to now expand the voucher program. The problem I have is this money is not infinite. We have to prioritize, and I believe that we ought to be paying teachers, we ought to be spending more money per pupil, and we ought to be having the infrastructure in our public schools rather than to take the money and divert it to a voucher program, which 80% of the people who are going to get these scholarships are going to use them to go to religious schools. That is where I think you're going to have a legal problem, and that was the crux of the legal problem last time.
Last time the Florida Supreme Court in 2006 said no because we've got this Blaine Amendment, among other things, saying that you can't give public money to a religious institution, right?
Right.
But now we've got a new Supreme Court.
We have a very different Supreme Court, a much more conservative Supreme Court. I don't know how that's going to end up, and that ought to be telling because when you've got a decision that says you can't do it, it ought to be an easy call to say the Supreme Court's going to uphold that decision. With this current court, I don't know. It's always fascinating to me that I always hear the arguments, we don't have enough money to pay teachers, we don't have enough money to do this, we don't have money to do that. But we always have money to expand the voucher program every single session.
Your dad was on that last Supreme Court, right?
I think he was.
All right. Sharon, make the case for us. Why are vouchers good? Why are they going to help our education system?
Well, I think, first of all, I'd like to say that it has been reported that
thousands of school choice moms may have helped Governor DeSantis get elected because that he did make it a campaign issue priority. We've been told that education is the equalizer, right? And the soundbite that we constantly hear also is options and choices. So why wouldn't we, our most precious gift, our future generations, provide choices to those parents? And there's a waiting list today. So we know that there are families out there that want these opportunities. And again, I think that that could have been a reason why we have Governor DeSantis and the Supreme Court today.
When Sean says that we should, if we have extra money, we should take it and devote it to improving our existing schools, what would you say back?
Well, I think that, you know, saying cash-strapped and throwing out rhetorical statements is one thing, but let's get down into the actual budgets and see where the money's going. Do we have top-heavy administration? Because over time, innovation and technology is changing a lot of industries, and education is already being decentralized. So we're not even really sure, does education today even look like something like education that's going to be 10, 20, 30 years down the road? So yes, we need to pinch our pennies. And at the state level, and I agree with you, Sean, there's money. There is money there. And I think we can do both, which we are.
Ernest, I'm wondering, is there evidence that says that school vouchers create more well-informed students who go on to get great jobs after they leave the public school system?
Well, the studies indicate that Florida's graduation rate has gone up since the school voucher program has been implemented. There are also studies that suggest it's not hurting the traditional public schools financially. However, my concern revolves around the fact that parents are an integral part of any school's success. And what the voucher program is allowing, it's allowing private schools to siphon off, engage parents who could help a struggling school elevate, and yet they're taking away that tool away from the traditional public schools. We always talk about the three legs of the stool, parent, teachers, and students. If you're taking away the best parents, that's going to leave those traditional public schools with less engaged parents, probably going to leave those schools with students who are struggling more, and it's going to make it more difficult for them to be successful. My other question about vouchers involves the state standard test and the level, the requirements that they apply on traditional public schools, they're not applying to private schools. If private schools are going to take these tax dollars, let's have them meet the same standards that the traditional public schools have to meet, and then we'll be able to say which is really doing a better job of educating our kids.
Wendy, we've had school vouchers for a while, but this is the first time that taxpayer money will be taken from the Florida Treasury and then given, passed through vouchers to private schools.
Right, and that's what makes this different. The way that this program has operated in the past has been that corporations are allowed to donate to organizations that provide the vouchers, then they are allowed to take a tax credit for that donation. So that, in effect, took state tax money out of the Treasury, but this makes it more direct. They will actually be spending the money. The state will actually be spending the money that it collected in taxes. So that takes this program to a new level, and this is why it's angering the opponents even more because of the diversion of money that Sean was talking about.
And we have a Florida Constitution that right now says that you can't take public money and then give it to a private religious institution.
That's right, and as Sean talked about earlier, this will be a pretty good test, one of the earliest tests for for the new conservative court. Will they stay with the precedent that says that this violates the religious separation clause in our Constitution, or will they overturn that precedent? Probably it may be one of the earliest tests because the parental consent bill for abortion, I think, is not passing in this session. That was going to be a major test for the court also.
And Sean, as Ernest said, you've got... this is going to be a real test, as Wendy said. But I'm wondering, Is there any requirement that the outcomes be checked along the way? That if we could we measure whether or not these kids are getting a better education by going to a private school? Is there any requirement that we track these kids
That's a really good question. No. And that's one of the problems as well. The sponsor of this bill was asked, how does a parent know whether the school that they're going to use this voucher to attend is a good school? How do they know their kid's getting a good education? How are these private schools graded? And the response was, they're not graded. There is no accountability other than the parent knowing where they want to send their kid. And if they don't like school, they go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. That is not an appropriate amount of oversight for a school that's going to receive tax dollars. I'm all for school choice, but the implication of tax dollars is when a lot more stuff becomes involved, and that's why I have an issue with this given the context of everything else we don't spend money on.
Sharon, should we be tracking? Should we kind of figure out whether or not this use of public money makes sense and is resulting in a good outcome for the students?
Well, I do think so, but again, I think parents, parents are the ones making the decisions, and it's parents that have been supporting these programs, and it's parents of those kids. I mean, my goodness, we remember the Times series on the failure factories, right, in Pinellas County, of those children trapped in those schools. Parents, I think, are driving this issue.
And you don't think that devoting more resources, smaller classes, doing team teaching, wraparound services in those failing schools would have improved those schools, spending more money on those schools to help deliver services?
Well, I don't know if just throwing money is always the answer to every problem, but I do know that I think parents are pretty smart. They're cognitive of their own children, and they know what may work best for them. And giving them the choice to be able to have an opportunity, especially if they are in a low-performing school, to be able to move their child, I think is a good thing. And I think parents support this.
And there's no doubt at this table that the governor is going to sign this, and this is going full speed ahead.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to end up before the Supreme Court, and we'll have to see what they decide. One of the factors that will be in play is not just that these are private religious schools, but in some cases, these are schools that require the parents to be devoted Christians, if you will, where they actively attend church and they actively attend Bible study. And that may be where people can challenge that, because if you're not Christian, then your tax dollars are going to an institution that is basically discriminating based on religion.
Will the Scientologists found a school to accept vouchers? At one point, we've already had hundreds of thousands of dollars of state dollars go to a school that was run by an organization that was labeled a terrorist support group here in Tampa. Mm-hmm. This happened years ago. Will this continue to happen? Another question really is, do we really want to add to the segregation, the division, the polarization of our society on the basis of things like religion? Will the religious schools teach science the same way? Will they teach biology the same way?
And that goes to my point of wondering, well, will we have better outcomes if more and more kids are going to private schools? All right, well, Florida is taking the first steps toward building three new major toll highways across rural areas of the state. Bill now on the governor's desk would create task forces to study the potential routes and commit tens of millions of dollars for eventual construction of the highways. Supporters say the roads will spur rural job growth, relieve congestion on Interstates 75 and 4, the main tourist road to Walt Disney World, and create new hurricane evacuation routes. Opponents, including 90 of the state's major environmental groups, are calling on the governor to veto the legislation, saying it will increase sprawl and destroy rural areas. One highway would connect Collier County in the southwest north to Lakeland. Another would extend from the north end of the Florida Turnpike over to the Suncoast Parkway. The third would extend the Suncoast Parkway north from Citrus County to Jefferson County at the Georgia border. That road would parallel an already existing four-lane highway, U.S. 19.
Sharon, is this a good idea?
Well, first of all, have you read the bill? Because the bill is a framework. I mean, if you actually look at the bill, they're going to be doing feasibility studies, and it's a process. And these corridors, they call them quarters now anyway, they've been being looked at for probably 10, 20 years. So it's not like this is new. But what this is doing is actually looking at that to go through the process of every alphabet soup agency, right? State level, the local MPOs, the regional. But the problem is, or the good part of Florida, we have a thousand people a day that we've had for the last 10 or 20 years expected to move here every day for the next 10 or 20 years. So what is that? That's somewhere between 6 and 7, 8 million more people. Where are they going to go? And we have to move not only people, we have to move goods. We have to move goods and services. So again, I think that this will actually be looking at that. It not only brings in the road infrastructure, but it's also bringing in the water, the sewer, the broadband internet into some of those communities. And remember the turnpike. I mean, we've had the turnpike for decades. Could you imagine if we didn't have it? We have Alligator Alley. We can't imagine not having that as well. And today, with technology, we're able to understand the impacts of this type of development in roads a lot better than we could in the past and be able to mitigate those issues. But there is a process here. So, I think there's a lot of jumping on a bandwagon and saying, whoa, this is something that we're not even there yet. But absolutely, I think we need to look at this because we're going to be about... We may be the state number two soon.
When Sharon talks about that bandwagon, 90 of the state's largest environmental groups all came out against this and said, no, it's not a good idea to begin to develop these rural areas. Now, as Sharon said, feasibility studies first. The roads aren't going to be built next year. But do you think, Ernest, do you think that these roads are a good idea?
Well, the question becomes, what do we want Florida to be? Do we want Florida to be simply a place that welcomes developers and brings on more subdivisions, more apartment complexes, even in some areas that we've come to love because they have retained that rural sense? If that's what we want, then these roads may be a good idea. I don't think that's what we should want. We always talk about the other Florida. It's a very popular book that I read growing up in the Panhandle. And the other Florida was always a place that was that celebrated the environment, that didn't welcome all that development. There are people in Marion County who don't want to see their rolling Green Hill horse farms taken away. I think for those in those rural areas who are seeking more prosperity, more jobs, we have some population centers for them that they can move to. We have some places that continue to have growth, and they can come here. They can come to Hillsborough County. They can come to Orange County. But if you want to live in a different kind of Florida, I think we ought to look at ways to preserve that.
Sean, one of the arguments in favor of building the roads is that if you extend the Suncoast Parkway up to the Georgia line, parallel to US 19, now you have two routes to go north during hurricanes.
If. This is not how things work. You do a study first, you determine if you need it, and then you fund it. Every time you try to get something in the budget, when I was a member of the legislature, what you had to do to get something in the budget was to fill out monumental amounts of justifications, of paperwork, of why this is a good idea. There has not been one study to say we need these roads. That's how we do business in Florida? No. You do the study, you determine if you need them, and then you fund it. That is the hypocrisy of doing this backwards because the president of the Senate wants it done versus when we usually do things in the legislature, which is determine if you need it and then fund it, is really laid out to bear in this. And this is a lot. This is when the president of the Senate wants something, this is how it gets done. You do feasibility after you fund it. Anybody else wants it, you determine if you need it first, then you fund it.
That's how things work in Tallahassee.
This is all transportation, big billion-dollar, big massive transportation projects works that way, whether it's roads or whether it's transit. I mean, they go through the studies. So again, read the bill. It's going to go through the entire process. But yes, they are going to look at it.
Wendy, Bill Galvano is advocating this right now. He's the Senate president. He'll be gone in another year. presumably out of the Senate, then does that mean that somebody else will take it up, or does that mean that this is Galvano's pet project and it may wither in a few years?
Well, the people who were behind it will remain behind it. Galvano acknowledges that he was drawn to this by discussions with road building industry people, asphalt industry people,
lobbyists.
That sort of thing. Lobbyists. Yeah. It's interesting to me that the two guys mainly pushing this, two state senators, both represent Hillsborough County. Galvano is based in Bradenton, but represents a lot of South Hillsborough, and he designated our state senator Tom Lee of the Notasassa as the guy to push it through. The bill, a couple of interesting things about it. As you noted, like 90 different environmental groups oppose this. I think of the three corridors, the one that has, that I think could have the most environmental impact is probably the southern one, going from Lakeland to Collier County. That gets into, for example, areas that are designated as primary panther habitat and secondary habitat on the northwestern side of the Everglades. And if this corridor has inspired a lot of development, it could be, that could be happening in the watershed that feeds Lake Okeechobee, which of course already has its problems from development-caused pollution. The idea is to build these roads by 2030 at a cost of what's estimated now at $1.3 billion.
All right, so we'll see what those feasibility studies say in the next few years. Well, Florida lawmakers have passed legislation that would allow more classroom teachers to carry guns in schools, the latest response to last year's shooting massacre at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School.
The governor is expected to sign the measure into law. It expands the existing school guardian program to allow any teacher to volunteer to carry a weapon if their local school district approves. Teachers who want to carry guns would have to undergo police-style training and undergo psychiatric evaluation. Under current law, only teachers who also have another role, such as a sports coach, are eligible to carry weapons on campus. The bill's passage came the same week that a school resource officer at Waitman Middle School in Wesley Chapel accidentally discharged his 9mm pistol in a cafeteria. There were no injuries. The accidental firing in the cafeteria of students is now being investigated.
Wendy, will this voluntary program make students safer?
That's a little hard to predict. There are already, I think, more than a dozen school districts in the state that have rejected the idea, including Hillsborough, Pinellas, Pasco, Citrus, one of the counties.
And Manatee, too.
And Manatee, right. A number of the big urban counties. One of the counties that's rejected it, it's been rejected by the sheriff that Governor DeSantis recently appointed in Broward County, and he doesn't want to accept that. The as to whether it will make students safer, the arguments are just the same ones everybody already knows, that, and these are the same arguments that have been made in the legislature. Those in favor say a good guy with a gun could stop a shooter. Those opposed say a good guy with a gun it could still have an accident, and they cite the Pasco incident as proof of that.
That Pasco incident, we are lucky that nobody was killed in that Pasco incident this week, where the deputy is standing against the wall in the school cafeteria, kids are in the cafeteria, there's a student like inches away from him, and luckily the weapon discharges into the wall.
And this was a trained law officer,
right,
not a coach or a teacher, whose gun discharged. And of course, Chevron Jones, Democratic House member from Fort Lauderdale, made an impassioned argument against this, saying that it could be dangerous, particularly for minority students, because of implicit bias.
All right. Well, Tampa's new mayor, Jane Castor, set some lofty promises as she took office this week.
Former police chief and first openly gay mayor of the city praised her predecessor, Bob Buckhorn, but promised to chart her own path.
The values that we share, diversity, equality, and opportunity, are the same values that have guided my career from the first day as a beat cop to my last day as a chief of police. And it is those values that will guide me as your mayor. Our neighborhoods are the foundation of our great city. And while some Tampa neighborhoods have seen improvement and prosperity, others have not. Too many residents see growth and development as something that happens somewhere else, but not in their neighborhoods. As mayor, I will work to ensure that every neighborhood has the opportunity to flourish, making Tampa the city where America shines bright for every citizen in every neighborhood.
So Caster says we're not going to write a subtle storyline. We're going to swing for the rafters. What do you make of that high-flying rhetoric?
Well, I liked it. I like what she was saying, but to fulfill those promises is going to be challenging. A lot of these neighborhoods do need improvement, but how do you avoid gentrification? How do you avoid changing the complexion of these neighborhoods and not fulfilling the needs of the residents who are currently there? That's going to be a challenge for her. I've always said Tampa is the biggest small town in America. We wanted to retain that small town charm, but at the same time, we want to continue to see it grow.
And that affordable housing issue is huge. Sharon, just 20 seconds, what do you think about Jane Caster's promise for the future?
Well, I think that she's going to have to focus on the city of Tampa budget, because the community investment tax, Hillsborough County voters may not be too anxious about reauthorizing it in 2026 when it expires.
Okay. Well, thank you all for a great show. Thank you for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org and continue the conversation on Facebook.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV, the PBS station in Tampa. And my guests on that panel were Ernest Hooper and William March. They were the journalists on the panel. And then the Republican on that panel, Sharon Calvert, and the Democrat on that panel, Sean Shaw. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. If you want to comment about anything you've heard, whether it be the school voucher program, $130 million in taxpayer money for school vouchers, we could talk about that. The beginning steps to expanding toll roads here in Florida, feasibility studies funded by the legislature this year, the voluntary program for arming teachers with guns in schools. That's been okayed by the legislature. And last week we saw the inauguration of the new Tampa Mayor, Jane Caster. So if you want to comment about any of those, you can email us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. You can also call us up at 813-239-9663. And I'm going to mention some other topics in a moment. I'll just read you some of the comments that have come in so far. This email comes to us from the 239 area code, and 239 anonymously says, "Love how the Republicans always project their own flaws onto their perceived adversaries, accusing the Democrat of using rhetorical phrases when all she can say is choice without being able to describe what the choices are." A comment about the expansion of school vouchers. This comment from Adam, he says, "Florida teachers have been asking for better salaries and money to pay for supplies. So what do Republicans do? Well, here are some guns and tax money for religious schools instead," writes Adam. It's Adam's thought. Our phone producer today, Frank Knox, and this is 88.5 FM. If you want to comment, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. And let's go to Gail in Bel Air. Gail, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Gail.
I'm wondering about the proposed toll road, or the one that they're going to be doing the feasibility study on. I wonder if anyone has looked into whether or not any of our state legislators currently own property surrounding the planned route. Do you have any idea?
I don't know about state legislators. I do know that the Tampa Bay Times has reported, and we've talked about it on the TV show, that Florida's wealthiest man owns land in Taylor County, right in the path, and there's only a few routes that it could take through Taylor County, right in the proposed path of the Suncoast Parkway expansion all the way up to the Georgia line. So we know that this guy happens to be a big Republican donor. Now, we don't know what the exact routes would be because, as you mentioned, there is going to be a feasibility study first. But
In all likelihood, you know, there are going to be a lot of people making money as the state buys up land for these toll roads as they go through. And whether or not legislators are in the path, we don't know, because we don't know what the exact paths are. But that's why you need good investigative reporters that can go through the land ownership records in each county as the routes are announced, and figure out whether or not legislators are about to make money. But we don't know yet, because we haven't seen any of the proposed routes. We just generally know where they're going to go.
And we just generally know that we probably ought to be suspicious, right?
yeah, that's right. Always be skeptical.
Yeah, thank you, Rob.
Thanks, Gail. Thank you for calling. All right, let's go to John in Port Richey. John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, thanks for the show, Rob. Couple of things. Your guest there, Susan, she made a couple of comments I found interesting that on the school voucher program, she was saying, I don't know if throwing more money at the situation would do that, when you asked about doing wraparound services and that sort of stuff. And that just made me think, aren't the vouchers program just throwing more money at the problem? They're giving it to the public schools, though, as opposed to giving it to the private, or the, giving it to the public private schools as opposed to the public schools. Just a thought there, and throwing more money at the problem. And the other one was, she mentioned the toll roads, the parkway, and she said, imagine without those roads, that one and the alligator alley. And my thought was, imagine the parkway without tolls on it. That'd be a much busier road. I know I would take it when I want to go down to Tampa. I use Gunn Highway because I don't want to pay the tolls.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the tolls are really where you have Republican-controlled states. They have become in vogue in the last decade or 20 years. So if you go out to Texas and you drive from Dallas to the airport, you're going to be paying tolls all along the way, including tolls to get into the airport. It's a way that the Republicans can say, well, we're keeping taxes down. But really what they're doing is that they're nickel and diming you at every step of the way.
We
don't know where these toll roads are going to go, but it's an interesting thing that we already have U.S. 19 that goes right up through Georgia, and then all the way, if you travel U.S. 19, it goes all the way up to Pennsylvania, Lake Erie, and ends there. It's a U.S. highway that has been around for years. It used to be one of the main ways that people from the upper Midwest and the East Coast got down to Florida. Oh, John, we lost you. Okay. And the question is it better? Some people are saying that it would be better to expand existing roads and use those rather than build entirely new toll roads where people would have to pay a fee. And then the other thing about one other point about the toll roads is that Georgia state officials, according to the Tampa Bay Times, have not been told that Florida is considering maybe building a new road up to the Georgia line. Well, once you get to the Georgia line, then where do you go if our toll road stops at the Georgia line? That's a question. But, you know, this debate over toll roads, I think, is going to take years. And you heard a couple weeks ago here on WMNF, we had the leaders of the Sierra Club on talking about this is their number one priority. They want to stop the toll road. And then last week, 90 of the largest environmental groups, including the Sierra Club and 1,000 Friends of Florida, sent a letter to the governor asking him to veto this legislation. So we'll see where it goes. 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. Dave writes this. He says, I'm just curious. They're going to build the extension up to the Georgia line. What happens after that? They're going to be shutting people out because of hurricanes, but where are the roads in Georgia to help these people move along the way from danger and hurricane force winds? That is a question. The Georgia officials say they've not been told that Florida is considering building a toll road up to the Georgia line. I think one of the questions, too, is it better to get on the road and evacuate from a hurricane, or is it better to shelter at a hurricane-proof shelter in the center part of the state? We know that once hurricanes go over land, the destructive force of that hurricane diminishes a whole lot. So should we be building shelters in the middle of the state and hardening high schools and grade schools where people don't have to drive 200 miles to the Georgia line, but they can just shelter, you know, maybe within 30 or 50 miles of their home in Clearwater or St. Petersburg or Sarasota and get away from the coast? Here's Leslie in Tampa who's calling in. Hi, Leslie. You're on M&F.
Hi, thank you. Well, amen to your comments about needing good investigative reporters and reporters in general.
Right.
Thank you for all you do,
thank you.
By the way. I wanted to give a positive example about non-gentrifying a community where that could happen. The University Area CDC has a whole neighborhood transformation strategy for the Sutkey City area up by USF, where they're land banking. So they've bought 20 properties, and they're working with Habitat for Humanity and also building like modular, going to be building modular homes inexpensively, and then only allowing people who already live in that neighborhood to buy those homes. And it will be even cheaper than renting.
As a way to keep home ownership affordable to working people.
Try to make it affordable, because right now that area is about 85% renters, and most of those landlords don't even live in the area or even in the state sometimes. So they don't really care about their property. So this is a way for people to have a stake in their own community. And they've also put in like a big park with a playground and things that's bringing people together. They have a lot of free events, and they're trying to make it feel like a community. And it's just such a beautiful way that they have been doing this. And now with the land banking and actually building homes that people can buy, it's just a really great model that they are doing for that area that could be gentrified, and they recognize that that could happen, so that's why they started buying up the properties and doing it this way.
All right. Well, I have to pay attention to that. And maybe we should get Mark Sharp back on and talk about this.
Yeah, I will contact you later.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Rob.
Leslie, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And David writes this. David mentions the Tampa Bay Times article where nobody told Georgia about the extension of the lines of the roads. Thank you very much. Ron writes this email. He's in West Tampa. He says the toll road proposal is the definition of insider trading and a boondoggle combined. Senator Galvano shoved this thing through the pipeline without much or any public insistence. Sharon Calvert on your panel wants to pinch pennies for schools, but not for toll roads. It's interesting, writes Ron, who's in West Tampa. Ron, thank you for that. And then here's an email from Anonymous. The 813 area code writes, are there any voucher program schools that have the legacy of a Hillsboro or Brandon or Plant or Robinson, all free to attend, writes Anonymous. I don't know. You know, that was one of the questions I asked. Should we make sure that all the voucher recipient schools have good outcomes? I think there's no doubt that there are some private religious schools where the kids end up going to great colleges and getting great jobs and maybe having great outcomes throughout that school. But I also think that there are startup schools and schools that whose intent is hard to determine. Maybe the intent is just to raise money for the founders of the school. But those, you know, those would be something that I would question. But there are examples of I think, quality private schools. The question is, do we want to make sure that all kids are given a chance, or just the kids whose parents are motivated enough to kind of like look at their public school and they think, well, that school has trouble, so I'm going to get the voucher program. But for the kids who are left behind, what happens to them? Are they just outcasts? Do we just say, okay, they're going to be the losers in our society? Or should we say we want to bring all kids up? What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And let's go to Dave in Tampa. Dave, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
Question about this voucher program. Do I understand correctly that there's no accountability for curriculum or for how the money is spent?
I think it's fair to say that private schools don't have nearly the number of regulations that public schools do. Now, as to what specifically they're required and not required, I can't tell you off the top of my head. But it's fair to say that there is much less scrutiny of private schools than there is of the public school system.
Yeah, I just find this almost shocking that Republicans who advertise themselves as fiscal conservatives are willing to give away our tax dollars in such an unaccountable fashion. If that's the case, not only can the money just be squandered. But you're talking about, for example, you can just the Scientologists want to open a school and teach kids about Scientology all day long and disregard science and math and so forth. That's just okay with the Republican Party of the state of Florida, apparently.
Apparently it would seem that way.
Yeah.
And I mean, we shouldn't beat up on Scientologists too much.
No, but, I'll just use that as an example. Yeah. I mean, any religion that wants to teach its doctrine all day long to kids, I mean, I'm not picking on Scientologists, but, you know, it can be any faith.
It doesn't seem
to be consistent with the mission of education.
And I think the question, I agree with you. I think the question is, what are the outcomes? If we're going to spend our tax dollars, and that's what this is, they're going to take $130 million out of the Florida Treasury and give it to private schools. If we're going to spend our tax dollars on that, don't those schools owe it to us to prove their outcome, to take all comers, not discriminate based on any sort of handicap or religion, or not discriminate based on ethnicity? And shouldn't there be some oversight from our government into those schools to make sure that they at least adhere to some of the principles of public schools? Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
And not only that, but if education money is an investment, which I think it is, and I think we used to have a consensus in this state that that's what it is, then you're looking for your return on investment here. You're looking, you need to measure your outcomes. If they're not doing that, they're literally squandering our tax dollars with no way of measuring the outcome.
That's right. We measure the outcomes in public schools. Let's do it for the private schools if they're getting vouchers. Yeah.
Well, I just got to hear some Republicans defend this. I know the woman on your program sort of acknowledged this point and said, well, parents will be the ones. Well, I don't know how somebody who's working, you know, 40 hours or more a week is going to be able to really measure the child's outcomes until it's too late. You know, I mean, once you've gotten through the school year, you begin to think, you know, I think my kid may be a little behind on reading. By the time you really wake up to the problem, it's too late, I would think, unless you're just a super observant parent. But yeah. I think for the most part, parents are put at a disadvantage in this as well.
Yeah. All right, Dave, thanks a lot. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, let's see what other people think. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Hi, Andy, you're on M&F.
Yeah, Rob, we got to get our priorities straight. But as far as the roads go, I mean, I'm a Florida native from Key West. I went through two hurricanes down there before I was 6 years old. I mean, I really like a good storm. But the problem, too, with these routes is more people evacuate than really need to. I mean, if you're within a mile or two of the coastline and the storm's coming straight at you, then, yeah, you might want to get out of the way. But these people get all freaked out. They're driving up to the Midwest, you know, basically to get out of a storm's way. And then it's just a huge mess on the roads. And I've talked to people who have evacuated but took U.S. 19, 301, 41, any of those interior roads and never had an issue with it. It's just that everybody always goes right for the obvious route, which is going to cause a huge problem. And we just don't need to have all those. I mean, I live within half a mile of the Gulf over in Dunedin, but I wouldn't evacuate because we're in a house that's built for it.
And you're not in a flood zone.
And building these roads is just, it's just giving it away, and it's going to cause such a huge impact on the environment. I mean, our water can't handle it. We've already got issues with, you know, too much issues of people tapping into the natural resources we have, but you keep bringing more and more and more people here and putting more stress on the state. We're going to get to the point of no return to where we won't be able to fix what we've screwed up already.
Yeah, and Andy, you're not living in a flood zone.
Hello?
You're not living in a flood zone, are you, Andy?
I am about, our neighbors across the street are in a flood zone, so yeah, we're about 20 feet away from it. So during Irma, they had to evacuate, but we didn't.
Because that's the problem, is that people don't expect the storm surge, and people that are close to that should get out, no doubt about it. But you're right. I mean, if you're 5 miles in or 10 miles in and you're away from any sort of water, there's really not much you have to worry about if your house is built to code. I mean, that is another problem. I think a lot of houses in Florida were not built to the Hurricane Andrew codes, the post-Andrew codes, and that could be a problem, too.
I mean, we had a wind mitigation done on a roof, and the guy said, nobody could have done anything better to this roof to make it ballistic. They've done everything that could be done. It's block, because that's how you build in Florida. That's how they did back in the 60s. You know, you build like you do in the Bahamas or places like that. It's got to be low and it's got to be solid. But
and you've got the hurricane straps. You've got the tie downs. Your roof is tied down to the foundation.
In, everything. Yeah.
All right, Andy.
So maybe we should open our house as a shelter. We'll look into that later.
Okay. All right, Andy. Thanks a lot. I mean, we do have to make sure that the builders comply with some strong hurricane standards, too, because these hurricanes are getting stronger, as we know. Those of you and those of us who have lived here for 40 years or 45 years know that we're seeing some stronger hurricanes. But I do blame the media, too, sometimes. I mean, I think we should pay attention to what went on at Mexico Beach and Panama Beach. But how deep was that destruction? Was it 1 mile destruction? Was it 2 miles inland? Was it 5 miles inland? And then at what point were houses safe? And that's a story that we almost never hear when we hear about that kind of hurricane up there. Let's go to Julie in St. Pete. Julie, thank you for calling in. What would you like to say?
Well, I heard on your show Friday that the number of vouchers handed out in this new program is only going to be 18,000. And then I Googled how many public school students there are in Florida, and it's 2,692,162. And how much money did you say they dedicated to this?
$130 million.
Jesus. For 18,000 kids out of almost 3 million students. Yeah, that's some bang for your buck, Republicans. You know, that bill is just ridiculous. But I am relieved somewhat to hear that it's up to the local school boards to decide whether they're going to allow teachers to be armed. And almost none of them are. None of them in this area. So no matter how stupid they get in Tallahassee, until they take power away from our local school boards, at least we have that to fall back on.
Well, that's an interesting point, because Tallahassee is trying to take more and more power up to itself and take power away from local governments. But you're right. In this case, they let that local power stay.
Yeah. Wait till next session, you know.
All right, Julie, thanks a lot.
Welcome.
All right, thank you. Let's go to John in St. Petersburg. By the way, you're listening to 88.5 FM, and it's 11:52. I'm Rob Lori. This is Radioactivity. John, take it away. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm good.
Just curious, are there any Islamic schools attached to mosques that are going to be getting vouchers?
There are Islamic schools here in Florida that are attached to mosques, yes. And I think they are eligible for the voucher program, yes.
Well, that's amazing considering, you know, the state of affairs that the Republican-led legislature would fund a mosque.
Well, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe if they don't discriminate, that's a good thing, I would say.
Yes, but I mean, there would be religious teachings.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem for a lot of people, is that they don't want their tax dollars to go to help fund religious teaching. You know, whether it's Catholic or whether it's evangelical or whether it's Muslim or Jewish or name your faith. A lot of people would rather have their tax dollars, and the Florida Constitution says you cannot do it. So it's going to be tested in front of the Florida Supreme Court sometime, I'm sure, in the next year. But this Florida Supreme Court is, everybody on that Supreme Court has been appointed by a Republican, so it's likely that they're going to go along with the legislature.
Well, they should go along with the Constitution, actually.
Well, and we have a Constitution, and people should look it up, the Blaine Amendment. It's got a very interesting history, but it basically was passed in the 20s, and it says that you cannot give state tax dollars to private religious institutions. Those aren't the exact words, but that's pretty close.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out how they can modify an amendment to the Constitution we voted for in felon rights, and now there's all these rules. So they'll figure how do they do that?
Yeah, and we voted to expand land conservation here in Florida by a huge amount, and they again this year declined to fund it to the amount that we voted to fund it at. Yeah.
So that means a court fight, right?
It does. But again, you know, the Supreme Court here in Florida now leans far, far, far right. And it's not likely to disagree with the legislature.
Yeah, that's a shame. Thanks a lot.
All right, John, thanks a lot. And we're going to go to Dave in Clearwater. Dave, thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Yeah, just a comment on charter schools. I've taught at both public schools and private schools. Private schools
typically do a better job for a lower cost. However, they don't cherry pick the students, but if the student acts out, if they don't toe the line, they're gone. Public schools have to eat them and deal with that. And that's where the issues come in. You know, if public schools were, or private schools had that, it was easy. I didn't have problems with students. Public school, I had kids tell me where to go and how to get there with all kinds of four-letter expletives, and nothing was done about it, nothing they could do about it. So the private schools do test. They use the state test equivalent. It used to be equivalent to the FCAT. I'm not sure what it is anymore. But they do test. They do want to promote themselves as, yeah, we give a good education, and they typically do.
And is that publicly, is that online somewhere that parents can look at it and figure out how well this private school is doing versus the public school in their neighborhood?
They should be able to find that. I can't say
that. All right, I got to find that out because that's something I need to know. Well, Dave, thanks a lot. Thank you.
All right.
All right, it's a good point that public schools, even if they wanted to kick somebody out, they can't. They've got to keep the child in the system. There are so many emails here. I don't know where to begin. I'm going to try to start reading with the people that are newer. Kevin writes this, Satan worshipers should start a private school. Maybe then the state legislature would take notice of the hypocrisy there. And DeMarco writes this, as with health care, quality education is a human right. And some in the U.S. are being denied, writes DeMarco. Tony writes this, and from St. Petersburg, he says, I learned to be highly skeptical of the motives of the Republicans who dominate Tallahassee. It's a junior league Trump-style use of public funds for their own or for their contributors, private profits that may be the real motive with regard to both school vouchers and the proposed toll roads. Whatever happened to the concept of the public interest, writes Tony. Tony, thank you for that. And Bob in Largo writes, people can call Governor DeSantis and leave a voicemail for his veto power. The governor's number is 850-717-9337. If you want to call the governor for any reason, give him a piece of your mind. Let's go to Anthony in Newport Richey. Hi, Anthony. You're on WMNF. Hi, Anthony. You're on WMNF.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
As far as public schools and charter schools and all that, I thought we were under the impression with our Constitution that there was no church or state. With that said, if anything, we should be doing and using government reinfrastructure policies to integrate into our schools so our children are actually ensuring their future themselves. And also our Constitution does promote freedom of religion, unless it is a threat to the rest of the constituents of the country. So if your religion is radical enough to where it's an issue, then there should be some revisions made to ensure that everybody's protected. I don't believe in, you know, Montessori or Catholic schools, and if you do and they subscribe to, that's fine. But you pay for them, not our school funds. That's why they're private schools. Many times I've heard standards and stories of things happening in private schools that never made it into the public view and forum because the private schools necessarily did not have to, for lack of a better word, publicize the indiscretions that may have occurred on the school campus grounds. With public schools, I'm totally in the idea that we should, every kid, like Mr. DeMarco said earlier, education is a basic human right. But what he's neglecting is, yes, it is, but it's on U.S. soil. Everywhere else in the country or in the world, kind of an argument right now. So what I'm wondering is, how can we facilitate something more educational and at the same time redoing our infrastructure for the future of these kids and integrate that versus religion? Why is everybody running to religion? Is that where the funds are at?
Well, I think that's a huge question. I don't know how to answer it shortly because we only have a minute left. But Anthony, thanks a lot. You raise a lot of good issues. I'll just tell you a quick story, and I can't name the school or I can't name the young person, but a young person who was not, and I know this because I heard this from a friend of the family, a young person who was not a member of a certain faith was going to a school, a high school of another faith. And there was a religious slur uttered at the school. against this sole person of this other religion. And turns out that this person is being kicked out even though the slur came against him. And I called a lawyer about it, and I said, well, what can be done for this family? And he said, it's very hard to sue a private school for religious discrimination. And, someday I wish I could tell that story. I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF in Tampa. Sean Canan is next. He's going to talk about how a private company spied on demonstrations.